Are you looking for Corolla? Some chocolate superfood with organic vanilla. Food-based vitamins keep you a healthy fella. Use your wife's credit card, don't even have to tell her. Go to Natural News Store, that's what it's there for. Get your superfoods, herbs, and a lot more. Feel young like you did before, and let Mother Nature's medicine work it like it's there for. I know you care for your health, therefore, don't eat those GMOs, throw them out the back door. Don't stay poor with your diet if it's killing you. Enjoy your life with nutrition that's filling you. We got freeze-dried fruit that's organic, super clean, super foods, best on the planet. Blueberry, strawberry, even pomegranate. Yeah, it's ready to ship, and if you buy it, you can have it. Yeah, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Check out store.naturalnews.com for all your organic supplements and superfoods. Or call 888-959-6415. That's 888-959-6415 to order now. Coconut, maca, spirulina, goji berry, superfood protein.
The Natural News Store is now open. Hi, this is Joni Cox with Homegrown Health with some great news for your health and your budget. Visit shopnaturalnews.com to start saving money right now on superfoods like cacao, camu camu, and acai. You'll find coconut flour, coconut sugar, and hemp seeds, as well as detox products like Zeotrex, Oxy Powder, and Nascent Iodine. You'll also find survival organic food supplies and colloidal silver. Both can help you prepare for natural disasters or other events that might threaten your health or safety. As Hurricane Sandy recently taught America, just one storm can knock out the power grid and leave us all scrambling for food and medicine. We've also got amazing herbal medicine cabinets and herbal survival kits. Plus, we're the exclusive source for the all-new Natural Attitude Turmeric Extract. It's a powerful, alcohol-free, liquid form of turmeric with high absorbability. Plus, get free shipping in the USA on orders of $99 or more. A portion of all sales helps fund health freedom and food freedom initiatives. Find all this and much more at shopnaturalnews.com. That's shopnaturalnews.com.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created WebSeed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WebSeed.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring.
Welcome. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with co-hosts, Dr. Attorney and Author Mayor Eisenstein and Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips. We're here live every Monday evening on blogtalkradio.com at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, 7 Mountain, and 6 Pacific Times. And we are proudly rebroadcast at naturalnewsradio.com Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern. That's 12 noon Central, 11 a.m. Mountain Time, and 10 a.m. Pacific Time. We welcome your calls during the live show. You can call in just to listen or to ask a question, offer a comment. That number is area code 646-478-0772. That's 646-478-0772. And you can email us during the week. Those email addresses are mayor, M-A-Y-E-R, at homefirst.com, mayor at homefirst.com, and attorney at vaccinerights.com, attorney at vaccinerights.com. This is October 20th, 2014. I'm Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips, and with me, my wonderful, dear friend and co-host, Dr. Mayor Eisenstein. Mayor, terrific to be with you again, as always.
Oh, Alan, my dear friend, I just kind of snuck onto the show here. I was running in some seeing patients this afternoon and kind of ran a little bit late. Seemed to have lots of more issues still with school vaccines. Nothing You know, your work is so much harder than mine because here in Chicago, the school system, at least at the grammar school, preschool, and high school level, have really not caused any problems, you know. But it brings up again that some parents have not written, you know, they forgot that you can't just say, I have a religious waiver. You know, these are some of the latecomers, the hanger-oners or so, you know. And so far, thank God, everything has turned out fine. But it's kind of like I'm having the last few of the patients and kind of took up a little bit of extra time.
Well, good for you that they that you're able to take that extra time, and good for them that they've got you to take that time with. So glad you made it in here. I saw you slip in at the last minute, but you're here, and that's wonderful. But I tell you, Mayor, there wouldn't be a better reason for being late to a show than taking care of people's health and or legal needs, and you do, of course, primarily health. But, you know, I'm just in awe of you and probably always will be. Not only did you get through medical school, you got through law school, and you've got the degrees and licenses, and that's just absolutely amazing. And I love the fact that there's a medical doctor I can talk shop with in the legal arena, and he actually knows what I'm talking about. So.
Oh, thank you, Alan. You know, you're so kind, you know. But the work you do, you know, it can't be quantified in how many lives you save, you know, or how many people you help, you know. I mean, the Talmudic expression, which I love so much, is in Sanhedrin. And Sanhedrin is the part of the Talmud. It's kind of like the Supreme Court. I mean, Sanhedrin is like the Supreme Court. And the expression goes, "Ha'me'abed nefesh achad ki'ilu ki'im olam malei." He who saves one life, as if he has saved the whole world, then makayam nefesh achad ki'ilu ki'im olam malei, is someone who kills one life or causes the loss of one life, as if he has destroyed the whole world. You know, I think it goes to all of our dear friends who are working so diligently, the mothers, the fathers, who really try to spread the message to really think before you educate, read before you vaccinate, you know. And I think this is so exciting because the message is really getting out there. I just got an email which showed the number, and I'm trying to pull it up here, the percentage of children who are not vaccinated in the school system around the country. I'm really proud of, I can find it here in a second. I'll find it.
Well, let me throw out
go ahead,
let me throw out a statistic while you're looking there. MMWR Weekly, Morbidity and Mortality Weekly, just came out, and this posted on the CDC website. They were, now who knows how anybody in any particular situation counts things and records statistics and so forth, but they put out a figure it was most states. They didn't have data from all the states, but they just came up with a figure that I don't think they said the average. I think maybe they said the median, but the average exemption rate with kindergartners around the country for the 2013-14 school year was 1.8%, and that was the identical figure that they gave a year ago for the 2012-2013 year. So that particular piece of information, for what it's worth, they're showing that things are holding steady. But there could very well be fluctuation in both directions, depending on what particular region or part of a state or country you're talking about.
Well, here I found the map here. Is going without vaccines in Maine and the United States. And this is 2012, and so we're far advanced from that. And here's what I'm most proud of. Illinois is now fifth in the country, but it's the states that are in front of it, Oregon, 6.4%, Idaho, 5.5%. I'm looking at the ones. Michigan, 5.3%, Vermont, 5.7%. That's it. Those are the only four. And Illinois is at 4.8%. And it's ranked fifth, but it's far and away the largest state, you know, to have such a high opt-out rate. And so let's just take 5%. And I looked up the number of children in the Chicago. It's not Chicago. It's all of Illinois. And there are 3 million children. That means if we take the 5% number, it's 150,000. But I tell you why that number is, that's just in Illinois alone. But that number is low because it doesn't count homeschoolers. They don't get, and I know in our practice alone, more than 50% of the children are homeschooled. And they're worried because they said it's doubled in the last couple of years. That's 2012. I wouldn't be surprised if we're at 6, 7, 8%. And that's incredible, because once you hit 10%, you know, you become a respectable minority. In politics, they say if you control 10% of the vote, you can influence elections one way or the other.
That's a really interesting point. Maybe that's one of the reasons there's, of course, not the only one, but one of the reasons that there's such a aggressive effort to cap and roll back these growing exemption rates. So it's going to be real interesting to see, you know, how things play out from here. And, of course, then there's this huge wild card with the whole Ebola thing. And I tell you, Mayor, I tried to put a little more time and attention into that issue over the last few days, and there is just an incredible amount of information all over the place on this issue. I don't know if you've had the opportunity in recent days to look at any of it, but I tell you, I see so much different information and conflicting information. I thought I'd share a few of those.
Please.
Things.
I tell you why I think it's important. You know, my wife Karen is really the genius in our family. I mean, she's the thank God the kids. I mean, I'm. She's both diligent and brilliant, and she's very, very unassuming. And she thinks that the Ebola thing is going to phase out over the next 3 or 4 weeks, and the efforts of trying to convince the American public to take the vaccine, which they expect to be out in December, it may be too late. You know, they but go ahead. I'd like to hear, and then of course I want to just mention in a few minutes the wonderful Ebola czar, the highly qualified Ron Klain, and anyone who doesn't know who that is, I'll give you some thoughts on who he is.
Oh, that sounds great. Now, I'm not asserting one way or another about the truth of any of the things here that I'd like to mention, but just pointing out that these are things that are in the news, because to me, you know, well, like for all of us, our thinking is evolving on the issue as the situation plays out and as more information hits mainstream and alternative news sources. But I'm leaning in a direction of seeing, feeling that what's more important than trying to figure out which piece of conflicting information is correct or not is simply the fact that there is so much information and that it is all conflicting. And it seems to me, I'm leaning the direction of suspecting this is all not accidental, but more by design for any of a variety of potential reasons. But one thing I wanted to start with, Mayor, somebody sent me this and a link to this study. This is a 1995 study. And this is in the International Journal of Experimental Pathology, and it says, lethal experimental infections of rhesus monkeys by aerosolized Ebola virus. So they were already, almost 20 years ago, in experiments transferring Ebola by the air, you know, with experimenting on monkeys. So the possibility of it being aerosolized, again, there's always this underlying question, in perhaps in large part due to the work of Dr. Lynn Horowitz some 20, 25 years ago at this point, where he was researching information, raising in a very compelling way the prospect that AIDS and Ebola were manufactured and not natural infections. But so with respect to the conflict about whether or not it's possible for it to be spread in the air or not, well, they were experimenting with that a number of years ago, which lends credibility to at least the possibility. Doesn't necessarily say what is or isn't going on now, but raise the possibility. But another article I read very recently claims that a CDC whistleblower, oh, here's the title of the article, CDC whistleblower exposes Ebola vaccinations containing RFID chips. And this particular article claims that a fellow who was Brent Hopkins, who was a CDC contractor, has come forward with some pretty serious allegations, saying that Ebola has been prepared for the general public in the form of disposable one-time syringes, and that the downside of that is that each of these syringes will contain not only the vaccine, but a micro RFID chip as well. That they want to issue these syringe packages to over 200,000 households by December 1st, and that consumers will be able to request the Ebola vaccine at their local drugstore. This is something that Hopkins, yeah, it is an S in the middle there. Hopkins indicates the chip will work toward more easily identifying and separating those who have been inoculated and those who have not, and that people who refuse to receive the vaccine will face serious hurdles in such things as getting employment, visiting public places, obtaining future medical care, and even potential prison time. Now, this is consistent with some of the more generalized vaccine-related conspiracy theories that have been around at least since the swine flu pandemic, if not prior to that time, but I think really came out more frequently or more often in those kind of times. And I don't have information to corroborate or refute this. I'm not, again, not raising this as a, oh my gosh, this is what's going to happen. But I don't know any reason why it's not a possibility. I just simply don't have information to confirm or deny it. But this then in contrast with, or maybe that's the wrong way to say this, another article from globalresearch.ca, a Canadian website, they have a claiming that there's a Liberian scientist who is saying that the U.S. is responsible for the Ebola outbreak in West Africa. And this Dr. Cyril Broderick, a Liberian scientist, a former professor of plant pathology at the University of Liberia's College of Agriculture and Forestry, says that the West, particularly the U.S., is responsible for the Ebola outbreak in West Africa. And he's claiming that the U.S. Department of Defense has been funding Ebola trials on humans, trials which started just weeks before the Ebola outbreak in Guinea and Sierra Leone. And he claims the DOD gave a contract worth $140 million to Techmira, a Canadian pharmaceutical company, to conduct Ebola research, and that this involved injecting and infusing healthy humans with Ebola. And the DOD is listed as a collaborator in a quote-unquote first-in-human Ebola clinical trial, which started in January of 2014, shortly before the Ebola epidemic was declared in West Africa just a few weeks later in March. And goes on to talk about the presence of, let me see what we got here. I'm trying to find, he was talking about biological weapons researcher or facilities being located right there in Sierra Leone that study viral fever bioterrorism. Again, these are the kinds of claims that are always very interesting, certainly possibly true, but I don't have information to go one way or the other with it. And on top of all of this information in the alternative media is the perhaps less interesting arguments about should they let somebody into the country who has Ebola or not, and all of that nonsense that gets argued about in the, well, not nonsense, but argued about in the mainstream press. There's always this curious mixture of things going on in the alternative community, and I feel sure that some of that is either misinformation or deliberate disinformation just to distract and confuse and so forth. But there were people during the swine flu pandemic, Mary, who were saying, this is it, this is the big depopulation, you know, people are going to start dying in droves after they get the vaccines, and it didn't happen. There are people who are making those kinds of claims now about the Ebola vaccine. This is the vaccine to prune the population, and they'll convince everyone to get it. I've seen one or two articles in recent days and weeks claiming that there is no Ebola virus spreading around on its own, that the only people in Africa who have gotten sick are ones who got vaccines from the Red Cross, and that there are people who are in Africa who are trying to deal with that, but they are unable, and that the reason that they were creating the epidemic there in Africa was to have an excuse to bring troops in so that they can go after the oil reserves and the diamonds and so forth that come from that part of Africa. These are all plausible theories, but once again, I don't have the information one way or another to corroborate them.
Alan, I love what you're saying, because, you know, we can even put a non-conspiracy theory, but one that we have fairly good evidence, the one that the UN, through the Red Cross, the Ebola outbreak started in West Africa shortly after they started a massive vaccine campaign for the meningitis, giving the meningitis vaccine. And going back to the studies that Dr. King pointed out to us, that people who were vaccinated with the influenza vaccine were four times more likely to come down with another type of viral illness during the 1 year afterwards. You know, and so we can explain it. I always love when you can explain something without malicious intent. That makes it even more powerful. And it could be that the people who are giving the meningitis vaccine from the bottom of their heart believe that this was the right thing to do and it was valuable and it was saving lives. But all of a sudden, these people are now susceptible. It would be very fascinating to see the connection between the people who received the meningitis vaccine and who came down with Ebola. And once enough people came down with it, clearly there's airborne spread to some extent, you know. Let me tell you, I think there's somewhere in there, there's the truth to all of this.
Well, and we have some interesting precedent with respect to what's gone in the past. You know, there were people saying all kinds of things about swine flu. Well, we finally had Dr. Wolfgang Vodarg, an epidemiologist who was at one time the head of the Subcommittee on Health for the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe. This is an organization comprised of 45 European nations, and here's the head of the Subcommittee on Health. You don't get much more mainstream medical than this. And he went public in 2010 and said the swine flu pandemic was a hoax, that not that there was literally no swine flu virus, there was, but the World Health Organization changed the definition of level 6, the highest rating they can give in a pandemic, so that a mild disease would qualify. And when they did that, according to Dr. Vodarg, it triggered contract clauses with pharmaceutical companies and countries all over the world for the sale of $18 billion worth of vaccines. So, sometimes the so-called conspiracy theories turn out to be to have a strong element of truth with them. The problem is that if you have, you know, two or three or several different conspiracy theories that are not consistent with one another, which, you know, all we can do unless we can get information to corroborate is see how things play out and look backwards and see which ones turned out to be true. And that's not something that's very comforting when you're looking at some potentially very disturbing theories that are on the table. But I think all of these, are at least hypothetical possibilities that we need to be potentially aware of. But I like what you said, Mayor, that, you know, it's possible for there to be a more innocent reality that gets interpreted as more malicious. You know, maybe there was, again, purely hypothetical, Red Cross over there providing care and treatment or vaccinating for whatever, and maybe it left them susceptible rather than they were being injected with Ebola, but maybe it left them susceptible for any Ebola virus to take root. That could certainly look like, or that could certainly result in only the vaccinated people getting the disease. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they were maliciously and deliberately and directly infected with the disease. So, again, many possible realities from the information as we have it at this time, but all worth looking at. I tell you, Mayor, I'm taking, I'm not one of the classic preppers who has, dug my little hole in the ground out in the mountains somewhere and put in my little prepper facility, although I wouldn't be above doing that if I could afford to. But I've done some less extreme, I think, sensible precautions. So I have my 10 ppm nanosilver. I will be investigating with the homeopaths I know if there are any particular remedies that they think might be ones that would be useful. I'm, of course, have stocked up on vitamin D and C with probiotics from you, and have my ear to the ground for other things that I hear about that may be effective against either viruses generally or Ebola specifically. And I'm prepared, if it comes to it, to quarantine in my home for some period of time. Now, I'm fortunate that I work out of my home as well. So, but if we hit a situation where people are, you know, being told, get your vaccine or else, I don't know. If we reach a serious enough point, whether it's Ebola or something else down the line in the future, I don't know that it's going to matter, I've already heard stories about, there was a, if I remember this correctly, I'll see, I can pull up the article on break here. There was the equivalent of this, if I don't remember this exactly true, like a principal at a school in Maine who was in Texas at a conference, and they gave her when she came back to Maine, they gave her 3 weeks paid leave time because she had been in Texas, where Ebola was in Texas. I mean, I've seen just a few of these kind of really extreme stories, but stories where people are just so overreacting. And the governor of Connecticut has reportedly declared an Ebola emergency there in Connecticut because of the problems in Africa. What dots am I not connecting here, Mayor? I mean, how can anybody do that? It was bad enough when we had small outbreaks of swine flu, and then states around the country started declaring emergencies, and Virginia declared a state emergency before they documented a single case of swine flu anywhere in the state. That's absurd. But now we haven't even, we've had one case in Texas, and one nurse, allegedly has developed this, and Connecticut declares an emergency. All of this is we haven't even gotten to the level of hype where, you would expect people to start lining up at the drugstore for the Ebola vaccine like they did for swine flu, and yet people are already going to some crazy lengths here. So it's crazy already.
Totally crazy. No. I'm going to hold Ron Klain, the wonderful appointee by the president, until after the break, but I think it's worthwhile looking at it. I think it is a problem, and the problem is, and here's the problem that I see it. This is serious, but it's not. And you can't have people who are unqualified to deal with it dealing with it, and that's the problem, And we have such experts, the Doctors Without Borders. Clearly, they've been dealing with this for 25 years. The doctors at the I'm trying to remember the name of the hospital, a Good Purse or so. The Graham Mission in Africa, and even two of their one doctor, one nurse got exposed. They have a lot to answer for, and a lot, it's pretty sad.
But I wonder, is it really incompetence and people are scrambling to try and figure out what they do? And as some people have said, the CDC is making it up as they go here. And when you're dealing
arrogant.
With something new,
no,
that's...
Incompetence I could deal with. Arrogance, when you don't know what you're doing and don't have the character to call on people who know what they're doing, it's arrogance. And that's what gets you into trouble all the time. I always tell my children, if you don't know what you're doing, if you're not sure, don't be ashamed to ask a question or ask someone. Don't care how foolish you look. The most foolish question is better than the wrong answer. And so, I think this is a matter of pure not wanting to look bad, politicizing something.
I love that, Mayor. The most foolish question is better than the wrong answer. I'm going to write that one down. Why don't we've got a caller on the line and has been very patient. Why don't we go ahead and go to break, and we'll get to the caller right after the break. Sound good to you, Mayor?
Sounds perfect.
Okay, stay with us. Stay with us, folks. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour. Dr. Mayor Eisenstein, Attorney Alan Phillips. We'll be right back with you. Don't go away.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening. The Natural News Store is now open. Hi, this is Joni Cox with Homegrown Health with some great news for your health and your budget. Visit shopnaturalnews.com to start saving money right now on superfoods like cacao, camu camu, and acai. You'll find coconut flour, coconut sugar, and hemp seeds, as well as detox products like Zeotrex, Oxy Powder, and Nascent Iodine. You'll also find survival organic food supplies and colloidal silver. Both can help you prepare for natural disasters or other events that might threaten your health or safety. As Hurricane Sandy recently taught America, just one storm can knock out the power grid and leave us all scrambling for food and medicine. We've also got amazing herbal medicine cabinets and herbal survival kits. Plus, we're the exclusive source for the all-new Natural Attitude Turmeric Extract. It's a powerful, alcohol-free, liquid form of turmeric with high absorbability. Plus, get free shipping in the USA on orders of $99 or more. A portion of all sales helps fund health freedom and food freedom initiatives. Find all this and much more at shopnaturalnews.com. That's shopnaturalnews.com.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created WebSeed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WebSeed.com.
We are back. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with Dr. Mayor Eisenstein and vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips. We have a caller on the line and who's been waiting patiently through most of the first half of the show. You are on the air. Welcome to the Know Your Rights Hour.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
We hear you fine.
All right, great. It's my first time listening. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Mr. Phillips, this is Tom from Florida. I actually contacted you today from an email regarding my situation with my child going to a Catholic school here in Florida and being told also in by our principal just 3 days ago, Friday, and this weekend receiving the letter that he told me was on the way, was that the bishop of our diocese is following the steps of other bishops, such as Bishop Noonan in the Diocese of Orlando, as well as I believe it's already happened in Miami, the Diocese of Miami. I was told that it's pretty much going to be taken up as a directive from all the bishops of Florida that all Catholic schools will no longer accept the religious exemption that, at least to me, seems very clearly against what Florida Statute 1003.22 in paragraph 4, which clearly it says right here, quote, each district school board and the governing authority of each private school. It then goes on and talks about the immunization record. Then under 5, it says the provisions of this section shall not apply if, and then 5A is this, quote, the parent of the child objects in writing that the administration of immunizing agents conflicts with his or her religious tenets or practices. And it seems, you know, you sent me, I did get your email, Mr. Phillips. Thank you for that. I just sent you one back. But it seems very clear to me that, you know, this is my state, right? And knowing that this is literally going to affect thousands of families, you know, even ones in terms of our parental rights, even ones that might still want, you know, are still getting the immunizations and might believe in that, they actually have a loss of rights as well. I think this case is way beyond and bigger than just me because it's actually going statewide. And I want to do something about it. I don't know what to do. Your email mentioned that I can't be the only Florida parent who's concerned and perhaps wants to do something about this. What can we do? It seems to me that Florida statute's on my side, but I know it's never as simple as that.
Well, it may or may not be, and boy, there's so many parts and pieces to this. First of all, Tom, thanks for your call and the question. I have interacted with, at this point in time, many people in Florida on this precise issue and from different parts of Florida. Mm-hmm. And let me give sort of the big qualifier here. I don't intend anything I say on the air to be considered legal advice, so hear all of this as educational information. And the reason I say that, not just as a general proposition, but I'm licensed in North Carolina, and I've done the legal research and the legal analysis on this in Florida, but with a North Carolina license, I have to then pass that over to someone in Florida with a Florida license for them to advise people on directly. So I will tell you my understandings about all of this, although I've had some nice confirmation from at least one attorney in Florida who was complimentary about the research I had done and the way I had put that together. But in a nutshell, yes, the law is very clear in Florida that the exemption applies to public and private schools. That's not necessarily the case in every state, and it's a factor of the wording of each state's laws. And the technical legal analytical approach to this is by looking at what are called statutory construction rules, which are just laws that every state has. It says, here's how you interpret the statutes. And this is sort of, for purposes of something like this, it ends up being sort of a silly thing in the sense that it's a roundabout way of citing law and legal precedent to come around to the end conclusion that, hey, guess what? This law means exactly what it says. And, you know, what a concept. But there are times when the statutes will conflict with other statutes or where the application of a law to a particular situation isn't clear, and you've got to get into more complicated rules about how you interpret it and how you know the proper interpretation and so forth. So these so-called statutory construction rules do have an important function in every state, and they're available at the in federal law level as well. So, but the formal analysis concludes that this law clearly applies to Catholic schools. And this raises some really difficult questions. Why is the church doing this? At least one parent that I've talked to recently said that they were told by the church that the law had changed and now it, you know, now they don't have to do it. There's no change in the law. So they either don't know what they're talking about or they're making up stories. And I certainly don't mean any disrespect to the Catholic Church, and I've known many Catholics personally, had many clients in my practice over the years, are, you know, absolutely wonderful people. So I'm trying to be delicate and sensitive here, but the politics here is nasty. And what it amounts to, in one sense to me, is the church is putting itself above the law. And I don't think it has anything to do with health any more than I think mandating flu shots for healthcare workers has to do with protecting patients or any of a number of other examples we could think of here. There's something else going on here, but we don't need to get off in speculation about that at this point. When somebody is violating the law, the question is, how do you deal with that? So we have tried in the past reaching out and negotiating with these folks, and negotiation maybe not quite the right word, explaining the law and saying, look, you can't do this. And they're not interested in hearing that, is my impression from the people I've dealt with on this issue in the recent past. But there is a growing number of families around the state that are finding themselves in the same situation, and they're very frustrated about this. I think a certain amount of what's going on here is the church is calling everybody's bluff. Well, nobody's going to actually sue a Catholic school to force them to accept their unvaccinated child. Well, if there's no other way to resolve this, I hope they're wrong about that. I hope somebody will, because I think that's what it's going to come down to. At least that's my impression at this point. I tried to play devil's advocate here, Tom. I looked up some research. I thought maybe they have an ace up their sleeve somewhere. Maybe they're going to try to take the position, if they were to be sued, that the law violates the Constitution, that it infringes, you know, on their right as a religious organization to do things the way they want to. Mm-hmm. And who knows potentially how far one would have to research to try to cover all the bases of hypothetical counter-arguments. But I did a preliminary research project on this recently, and what I found is that even when I was trying to make an argument for the church, I came up with an argument that supports the parents. So I can't say that they don't have a legal argument, and I just don't know what it is. But if they do, I don't know what it is. And you never know what a judge is going to do, no matter how clear and cut and dried you think your argument may be. It's always a roll of the dice to one degree or another in court. But I don't see a way to fix this legislatively because there are many vaccine issues that I think people shouldn't take to court, that they really need to address it legislatively. But the legislation is clear. There's nothing there to fix.
Yeah, I know.
I really think the solution here is that somebody's got to go to court. And I'll respond to your latest email, Tom, with links to or information about how to get in touch with some other parents that have already been dealing with this, because at the end of the day, I think it's going to be one or more of you who decide you're willing to be involved in one way or another, contributing financially for attorney fees, or somebody's willing to be the plaintiff, the one who's going to sue. But the bottom line is we've got to find an attorney who's willing to take the case, and we've got to find one or more parents who are willing to be the plaintiffs, you know, be the ones on behalf of whom the attorney is filing the case, and we put it in front of a judge. But I don't think this is like most lawsuits where you're talking about potentially a series of ongoing motions and hearings and procedures involved. Like if you were, I don't know, if you'd been injured and were suing somebody for, you know, running a stop sign or whatever. This is really, to me, a very simple, narrowly focused issue. This is a legal question only. Does the church, do the Catholic schools have to allow religious exemptions? It's a yes or no question. And the wording of the law in Florida and the legal precedent in Florida says nobody has authority to scrutinize your beliefs. You fill out the form and you get the exemption. So it's not a question about do your beliefs qualify, because the state doesn't have authority to ask that question. The only question is, does the church have to allow the exemption in its schools? And so I think this is the kind of case where you file the case, you schedule a hearing, and the attorneys from both sides stand up in front of the judge and make a legal argument, and the judge decides who wins. So I think it should be very inexpensive as compared to what lawsuits can cost, generally speaking.
Alan, I have some experience in Chicago here with the same issue. The two groups that I have the most difficulty with of my patients are the Orthodox Jewish community and the Catholics. And I've been in touch for the last 5 years with Mary Murphy. She's the lead attorney for the Archdiocese here in Chicago. And she explained to me, at least in Chicago, what the position of the church was. And she said the church couldn't understand that a Catholic, there's nothing within Catholicism that prohibits vaccines. Since you're going to a Catholic church, you should be able, a Catholic school, the school should be a right to enforce or Catholic law. And I explained to her, she was an exceptionally good attorney, that it has nothing to do with being Catholic or not Catholic. It has to do with that you have a right to have a personal religious waiver here in Illinois. And that kind of resolved the problem. And so it may be, looking at it from the best standpoint, that there's no one who has explained it to the church. Now, there's a problem, because the church will have their Catholic doctors, and virtually every Catholic doctor gives up being a Catholic when it comes to medicine. Because I also was in correspondence with Cardinal George a few years ago about this, and I asked him about the issue of the chickenpox vaccine, which was grown on the cells of aborted fetuses. And I said, as a Catholic, how could you possibly recommend any of your Catholic families to inject this into their children? And his answer was very unacceptable to me. He said it was a sin that occurred many years ago, and we have to forgive it. But it just made no sense to me. But I think what happened is he's so entrenched with his Catholic doctors told him, and I can almost tell you that there's a part of this in Florida where the church reached out to the Catholic doctors, and they told them that vaccines are safe, effective, and there's no reason why any Catholic child should not receive vaccines. And the same thing with the Orthodox Jewish community. And, Alan, we've had some of those families call in from New York, which has been even a bigger problem, because I now have a couple of people are emailing with me who've been expelled from school, an Orthodox Jewish school, exactly the same thing, because the rabbi, the head principal in the school, said that if you don't have vaccines, you cannot come to the school. Interesting enough, another one of the head rabbis in New Jersey made a proclamation in New Jersey, no Jewish child is going to be denied a Jewish education over the vaccine issues, which is very interesting. And I would think that the church maybe will get smarter and stand up and say, no Catholic child will be denied a Catholic education because of the vaccine issue. But it's, I agree, Alan, I think your outline of it was perfect. It requires, maybe even before a lawsuit, an attorney who can meet with the archdiocese attorney and work something out. One step before, hopefully, it has to go to litigation.
Well, right. I think that's always what you want to try first whenever you possibly can. We've been down that path in Florida, but it may be... Tom, what part of Florida are you in again?
I am in St. Augustine.
St. Augustine,
all
okay.
All the way to the top, I think.
Which diocese is that?
It's the Diocese of St. Augustine.
Oh, so there is a saying, okay. That I'm not sure that I've dealt with anybody in that specific diocese, so maybe it would be worth having an attorney write a letter, and I've already written it all up, the argument and everything. I can send that to you if you can find a local attorney who'd be willing to do that, because that is always the best way. You know, court is like avoided at all costs. But I'm not real optimistic about it because that effort in other parts of the state hasn't been helpful. But I think it's worth trying, and it's something we can do. And Mayor, it was real interesting. I had clients recently in Maryland, I believe it was, Orthodox Jews, and they had a local attorney, and I was talking with the local attorney. And I was going down this path, that something similar to what you were saying, Mayor, and let's make the legal argument, and the attorney was very polite and professional with me. He's a really nice guy. But he's saying, no, Alan, you don't understand. There are some doctors on the board of this the school or whatever it was, and they were at one point trying to decide whether they wanted to ask for this to be resolved under Jewish law or, state law or outside of that context. And of course, I know nothing about Jewish law, but I was recommending that they lean in the direction of let's do it with the state law and federal law legal rights here, because we had something that was a more clear argument, I think, in terms of what the outcome had to be or should be. But it was interesting, though, Mayor, and my point was mainly that he was saying there really wasn't room in this particular instance to try to negotiate, to try to explain here's how the law works, because there were some doctors involved that were just, adamant about the position, and there just wasn't going to be anybody budging there. So they were looking at going ahead and filing a suit. I hate to see that happen in the sense that I wish people could be more reasonable and cooperative and not force someone to go to that step. But it may be that either people are just so adamant about their views, whether because they think they're right legally or they just don't think anybody, legal right or not, they shouldn't be able to not be vaccinated. Whatever's going on the other side, we never know for sure. But there are cases where you just have to either make a decision, you go to court or not. Well, I hope, Tom, that you're not in that position, and I'd be glad to help you, you know, to help. I say I'm glad to help because it's not likely you're going to find a local attorney who's dealt with this issue before or who's familiar with it generally. But even if you had you find someone who's receptive and open, I can save them some time and you some money because I've already been down that path in terms of doing the research and putting together the argument. So I'd be glad to pass that along. If it turns out that somebody does need to file suit, then I hope we can find the attorney and the client, you know, willing to do that. Because you do that once somewhere and win, and that may send a signal throughout Florida and maybe even throughout the country, you know, that this is just not something.
Yeah, it's a big impact, and it's, again, it's not just an individual, just me getting affected by this. It's the whole state, and if this is
and different parts of the country as well. Different parts of the country.
Yeah, I guess I didn't know that.
I hear this story from time to time, one version or another of it from different parts of the country, but I've heard it most frequently in recent months, maybe even over the last couple of years or more, coming out of Florida over and over again. So apparently, you know, they're really pushing forward with the agenda there. At one point, it was dependent on what diocese you were in. It sounds like from what you're saying that they're really working to make this uniform policy throughout the state.
Yeah,
and I doubt that the goal is limited to Florida in that respect.
Exactly. That's why it's much bigger than just me, and it's I bet it's much bigger than just this bishop, because he's not the first one to be doing this. There's a domino effect going on here, and it's kind of surprising. Let me ask you this, because I know you got to go. You said was it other bishops that in the past that you've contacted in Florida and just tried to ask them, why are they doing this, and they didn't really respond? And is that what you were saying before? You've actually contacted some?
Well, I'm not able to directly get directly involved with a North Carolina license. Now, I work with people all over the country with vaccine religious exemptions because they involve federal First Amendment rights. But some issues are purely state law issues that I can work with a local attorney on if there's a local one that would like me to do that, but that I can't directly represent people. So I've only been able to be involved in this indirectly, but my understanding is that there have been attorneys who have attempted to work this out, to settle it out of court, to explain to them that, no, the law really doesn't allow you to do that.
Yeah.
And so far, people have not been successful. But I would not, and I really appreciate Mayor making that point. I was sort of jumping to an end stage without walking through the intermediate layers there. And I agree 100% that if there's the opportunity to try and settle things outside of court, that's almost always the preferred way of doing it, just for any number of reasons. You know, people feel better about settling, it costs less, and so forth.
I can tell you like in Florida, it's way beyond just a lawyer-to-lawyer discussion. You know, it sounds like they're trying to set down policy at a much higher level.
Yes, exactly. They are.
Sort of the feeling, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, they are. And that's another reason why it's so concerning to me. It's they're taking away everyone's right to all their schools. That's quite a lot of people. It's not one small school.
You know, it's kind of interesting because in Chicago about 2 years ago, there was a meeting of Orthodox Jewish doctors on the vaccine issue, and I went there, and it was very, very depressing that the head doctor from this group gets up there, and he turns out to work for Merck, the vaccine company, and he gave a lecture on the value of vaccines. And when I said to him, as Orthodox Jews, how do we rationalize injecting vaccines for sexually transmitted diseases into our young children? What message are we sending them? You know, and his answer was, we don't know where they've been. Unbelievable. I said, you don't know where a one-day-old baby is. You don't know where a six-year-old is. You know, I mean, shame on you. I mean, it was just so doctor-like, the answer, that it didn't seem to come from a religious person, even though he claimed that he was a religious man. But also the problem we have, Alan, in times past, rabbis, pastors, priests were very frequently doctors also. And so they were able to discuss things both without having to necessarily only get expert opinion. And now with this almost non-existent, you can't get expert opinions from clergy who are also in the medical field.
Right.
Well and it's interesting.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, Tom.
No, I was going to say, I guess you said you'd respond to an email. I don't know if there's others. I hope there aren't it's just myself who wants to at least try and do something about this. This is quite clear.
There are many people dealing with this issue in Florida,
okay.
And have been, you know, over a period of time. So I'll hook you up with those folks.
Okay.
If anybody listening is in Florida, or I guess anywhere else for that matter, but interested in the issue and wants to be connected, send me an email, attorney@vaccinerights.com, and I'll also, you know, plug you, for anyone else interested, into groups of people down there that are dealing with this. And see if we can't find some of you who can pull together a game plan. But there were at least one or two families in recent months who were trying to find an attorney who would take the case, and were having difficulty with that. And I just don't have any connections to speak of in terms of attorneys in Florida, so I'm not really of much help. But people have sued the Catholic Church in the past. Surely there are attorneys who would take the case. It's just a question of, you know, finding them. So we'll see what we can do. It reminds me of the issue where there are, well, this is just one of many ways that different people, entities, organizations are overstepping constitutional and in this case also state law boundaries in the vaccine arena. It's a very disturbing trend that's going on, not only necessarily with just the individual examples, but the fact that this is going on in many different ways. There are states that have passed laws that I believe would not hold up to constitutional scrutiny, that have limited or made it harder to get exemptions. There are a couple of states that have laws allowing children to consent to vaccines. That is, in my opinion, blatantly unconstitutional. But those laws are on the books until somebody either gets them fixed or challenges them in court. There are medical doctors around the country that have just dug in their heels and said, we're not going to treat anybody who's not vaccinated, whether they have a legal exemption or not. That not only raises serious medical ethical questions in my mind, but I think potentially may also be violating parents' constitutional rights. So there's just, again, a lot of different layers and levels where this is all going on. So we've got to start, you know, fighting back on some of this, or it's just going to keep going more and more.
Yeah, absolutely. One comment, when my kid was only 3 to 6 months old, we went to different pediatricians in Atlanta and told them, you know, after we had the consultation and they weighed them and they did all that, near the end they talked about the vaccine schedule. And I said, oh, I know, I'm not going to do that. And they told me not to come back.
Yeah, that's even more common around the country. I love those patients, and I wish you were here in Chicago. I sent a thank you card to the pediatrician who throws them out of their office for sending me this wonderful family. I know.
Yeah,
well,
okay.
call back another time, Tom, and I'll give
yes,
you, if
thank
you're
you.
Interested, and I'll give you my legal analysis on why that violates your constitutional rights. But who's going to sue a doctor to make them see their child? Again, you know, another question there. Mayor, I think we're out of time. I think we
Tom, thank you very much. Great discussion.
Thank you guys so much. It's my first time hearing the show. I'll definitely be listening to it. I appreciate everything. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Take care.
Bye.
Well, Mayor, I'm going to take us out here.
Sounds great.
Have a good one. You've been listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with Dr. Mayor Eisenstein, Attorney Alan Phillips. We had a guest, Tom from Florida, this evening. Glad to have Tom on the phone with us. We're here every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific Time. Archives are available at blogtalkradio.com/KnowYourRightsHour from any of our past shows. And we're rebroadcast on Natural News Radio Wednesdays at 1 Eastern.
throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency, for we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom bring.